You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Touchdown!
Daryl Morey. About 13 months after the deal was allegedly at the two-yard line, the Rockets are finally, officially in the end zone. Carmelo Anthony verbally agreeing to a deal with the Rockets on Tuesday afternoon, as first reported by Shams Charania of Yahoo Sports. With that, welcome into Locked On Rockets, the home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. As stated, we got the news from Shams Charania, Carmelo Anthony officially verbally agreeing with the Rockets. He's back home in the States after being in Africa this past week as part of the NBA's traveling party out there. They had the charity game over the weekend. And as far as when the deal will actually formally be signed, that's just a matter of Carmelo and Rockets representation being in the same room at the same time. We do know that Daryl Morey is back in Houston. He's been traveling. He's back. We know Carmelo is apparently back in the States, so it should not take very long until the official press release is sent out. At this point, all that was waiting is for Carmelo to make that commitment, and that's what he's done. And, of course, it's for the veterans' minimum contract, so that's always going to be there for the Rockets. None of this is too surprising because, well, we've been speculating on it for a month this offseason for a reason. We also speculated on it almost the entire 2017 offseason when Carmelo was property of the New York Knicks and was trying to get his way out of there via trade, eventually did, but to the Oklahoma City Thunder, who had a slightly more favorable return for the Knicks than what the Rockets were offering with Ryan Anderson. But now with Carmelo getting his freedom via trade and buyout, Oklahoma City did not want to pay what it took to keep that team together now that they re-signed Paul George and were on the hook for hundreds of millions in luxury tax money. That, combined with the awkward fit last season, made Carmelo an obvious cap casualty. Oklahoma City traded him to Atlanta. Atlanta, as a condition of the deal, agreed to buy him out. And finally, after 13-plus months, really ever since June 28th, 2017, when Chris Paul was traded to Houston, we finally are in the end zone. Carmelo Anthony is a Houston Rocket, and even though it's been trending that way for a long time, after how close it came last summer and not getting to the finish line, it's nice to finally have that finality. As far as how it will work out, your guess is as good as mine. I'm not oblivious to the concerns that are there that have been raised based on what happened with Carmelo Anthony in Oklahoma City this past season. If you want to paint a case for optimism, you would point to the fact that Chris Paul and Mike D'Antoni have a much more personal knowledge of Carmelo than Russell Westbrook and Billy Donovan did. There's a comfort for Carmelo in Houston. It's where he wants to be. Houston plays a system that's probably more conducive to his strengths. Mike D'Antoni has run a lot of isolation basketball in Houston really ever since Chris Paul got here. This past season, we saw for various stretches Chris Paul and Ryan Anderson key that second unit when James Harden sits and have a ton of success on the pick and pop. That's something you could see with Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony this coming season. Whether Carmelo starts or doesn't, you can stagger the minutes to where you have Carmelo as an anchor in that second unit, also running the offense through him at times at the elbow when James Harden is not in the game, and perhaps you also hide his defensive deficiencies a little bit by doing so. That said, I understand that he's 34 years old. I understand that he's been in the league for 15-plus years. He's never been a top-shelf defensive player, and now, with all that mileage, what limited ability he had has been compromised. So I'm not looking at this anywhere near the same way you would, say, a Chris Paul acquisition last summer. Carmelo might be a star in name, but in terms of impact on the court, he's a piece to the puzzle, and hopefully the Rockets can put him in positions to succeed as a role player in ways the Oklahoma City Thunder could not this past year. That said, after talking about it for so long, I'm excited that we finally get to see what happens on the basketball floor, because you can make arguments in favor of it, you can make arguments against it, you can point to his prior statements about role and, well, is he accepting of a role that may have him in the mid-20s minutes per game, not even a confirmed starter. We'll have to wait and see how the Rockets want to use him, but you can speculate the pros and cons all day long. At this point, I'm finally excited that we get to actually see this play out starting in mid to late September when training camp starts, and so we can finally settle the debate on the basketball floor rather than abstractly with these various camps on social media and wherever you consume your basketball content. We'll talk more about Carmelo, the basketball player, and his potential fit with the Rockets in just a few moments. We'll also get to what could be left for the remainder of the offseason now that Carmelo Anthony and that acquisition is finally in the rearview mirror. Those are in the coming segments. But for now, I want to step away from the basketball a little bit and just look at the logistics of how this thing is actually going to go down and what the next steps are. Because even though Carmelo Anthony may not be a star on the basketball floor anymore, look, this is a seismic acquisition, at least from a branding standpoint. It's a guy who has been in the All-Star game 10 times. He's a 3-time Olympic gold medalist. He's a former NBA scoring champion. He's a certain first ballot Hall of Famer. Those types of signings don't come around every day. It is going to be a big deal. It is going to sell a few more tickets, move a little bit more merchandise. Whether he's deserving of that or not, he's probably not. At the same time, it is a big deal, so it's interesting to see how the Rockets as a business are going to play this. I've been told, nothing definitive, but I've been told they don't plan on having anything major like they did for Chris Paul or Dwight Howard in terms of welcoming parties. Dwight they did outside in the streets, Chris Paul they did in Toyota Center. My guess is in part it's because they're trying to make Carmelo Anthony one of the guys. It's not intended to be the seismic acquisition that either of those two were, and I don't think the Rockets want to make it seem to Carmelo or to anyone else around the organization or following the team that it is. They see him as one of the pieces, someone that can succeed in the right situation. They don't see him as any sort of transformational guy. So I think that's why you're not going to see a big deal made out of this in terms of some massive citywide celebration. That said, I do believe we will have, if not a press conference, at least a conference call, some sort of introduction of Carmelo to the Houston media in the coming days. The reason I speculate that is because if you don't do it now, then Media Day in late September is going to be all about Carmelo Anthony. If that's the first time that he meets with the Houston media, then and the national media that are there, every story is going to be based on the integration of Carmelo Anthony. And we saw last year at Oklahoma City, that's not always a good thing. That's when we first heard the quotes about him laughing at the concept of coming off the bench. My thought is that the Rockets will want Media Day and the start of training camp to be about the team as a whole, running it back, trying to finish the deal against the Warriors in a way they could not this past year, rather than just about the integration of Carmelo Anthony. So my guess is that you will see some sort of media availability in the coming days to get those initial quotes, those initial stories out of the way. Also, quite frankly, it's an opportunity because most teams have media day the same day in late September. Now, granted, the Rockets will draw more attention because they're one of the league's best teams. And between James Harden, Chris Paul, and Carmelo Anthony, there's a lot of star power. But at the same time, you have all the other media days going on. Certainly the Warriors and Lakers are going to draw a ton of attention as well. And you have baseball entering the playoffs, the end of the regular season. You have football in full swing. Right now in August, there's not much on the sports calendar. You're still not very close to the playoffs in baseball. Football still isn't really here. No one in the NBA is doing much of anything. It's the slowest month on the calendar. So for the Rockets as an organization, if you do something the next few days, if you make Carmelo Anthony available, and also for Carmelo's reps, then that's an opportunity to get a few headlines, to get some buzz in a month that otherwise, other than the NBA schedule release, we will have more on that in the coming days as we slowly learn what trickles there are on who the Rockets are going to play this upcoming season. But other than little things like that, there's not a whole lot going on for the league in terms of the buzz factor. So that's another reason why, if it's close, I do think we will hear from Carmelo Anthony and you'll get to hear him address himself what's different about Houston and Oklahoma City, what he thinks of his role. There's been a lot of people all summer long that have been putting words in Carmelo Anthony's mouth, assuming based on prior statements in one place that it's necessarily going to be the same thing somewhere else. And I've said before, I don't think that's entirely fair. You need to ask him those questions. Well, the opportunity to ask those, in my opinion, is probably coming very soon. And when we hear the answers, I think that'll shed a little bit more light on what his mentality is going into this experiment in Houston with Carmelo Anthony joining forces with his good buddy Chris Paul and, of course, James Harden as well, entering this 2018-2019 season. So I wanted to lead with the discussion of the logistics because while talking about the basketball fit is interesting, at some point it just gets old. We've been around the block on Carmelo really for a month now. July 6th was when Woj reported that he and the Oklahoma City Thunder would be parting ways. And then, of course, we went through a lot of this last summer as well. So logistics, when we hear from Carmelo, and of course that will address some of the fit questions as well, that's what I wanted to lead with because to me, when we hear from Carmelo, that is the next step in this process, besides, of course, him putting pen to paper, but that's just a matter of when he, Daryl Morey, or whoever the Rockets representation is, are in the same room. That said, I'm trying to walk a fine line because while some of these questions are interesting to me, the logistics of it as a media person, I know for some of you, in terms of when he's available for a press conference or a conference call, that may not be as exciting to hear about as the actual basketball potential. And even though we've discussed that plenty before, I do want to get into it a little bit today, now that we actually have news of him verbally agreeing to a contract with the Rockets. And I've been thinking about this for a few days, now that we're moving on to the actual basketball impact segment of our Carmelo Reaction podcast. And this is based on our prior show with Jesus Rodriguez. Jesus, of course, you probably know him better as JSports_ENT on Twitter. He's a league insider that I really respect from the East Coast, who knows Carmelo very well from his time in New York. Jesus is also, of course, the guy who reported extensively about Carmelo's flirtation with Houston last summer and how close that trade came to being completed. By the way, if you haven't heard that episode or you want to hear any others of our Carmelo-centric shows over the past month or even going back a year plus, please check out our Locked On Archives, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, TuneIn, wherever you listen to your podcast, just search for Locked On Rockets or any show across the Locked On Podcast Network, because we have such a great network of shows across the NBA and the NFL, and you should be able to get those archives, not just from a few days ago in the case of Jesus, but even a few weeks and years ago in the case of all the Carmelo potential fit talk that we've had about him and the Rockets. That said, in our last show, I picked Jesus' brain for a while because he's someone who knows Carmelo well. He's watched his game for many years in New York, and he knows what his limitations are, especially now being 34 years old, 15 plus years in the league, etc., etc. And I asked him a lot of questions on that show last week, and one of the more interesting answers that Jesus gave to me was when I asked him the question about whether the main concern for Carmelo in Houston should be physical or mental, meaning, should we be worried about him buying into the role of not being a primary option, maybe not even being a starter, or should you worry about just the fact that he's 34 years old, his defense is slipping more, the 15-plus years of mileage, etc., etc.? And given Carmelo's national reputation, whenever I ask anyone nationally this, I always sort of expect the answer to be mental, because fair or unfair, and a lot of it is unfair, attacking Carmelo's mentality, it just seems to be the trendy argument. And yet, for Jesus, his concerns were physical, and the more I think about it, he made a really compelling case for it. Look, as stated, Carmelo is 34 years old. He's got 15-plus years of mileage. His athleticism, his explosion, they're not what they used to be. And so because of that, there are very specific X's and O's situations in which he needs to be used if you want him to succeed. It reminded me a lot of comments from Brian Geltzeiler, that's Hoops Critic on Twitter, another guy I really respect in terms of his league-wide knowledge, when I asked him a similar question on this show a couple of months ago. Brian's someone that, from a tactical standpoint, I think is one of the better national follows in the league. Again, Hoops Critic on Twitter. And he flat out told me that he thought Billy Donovan botched the situation in Oklahoma City from a tactical standpoint. In other words, it shouldn't just be using Melo as a catch-and-shoot guy. While he can shoot the ball well, he's a natural scorer. And so to take advantage of that, you need to run your offense through him at times. Keep in mind, he is a former scoring champion in the past 5 years in the NBA. So if you can get him the ball at the elbow, especially against second-team players, I think the optimal time, as stated before, is probably early in the second and fourth quarters. We saw this some with Chris Paul and Ryan Anderson, although Ryan is not nearly the scorer that Melo is in terms of creating his own shot, but you can use him at similar points on the floor. Also, the synergies with Chris Paul. What we saw when Ryan Anderson was right in terms of the times of the games that they attacked with him and that combination with Chris Paul without James Harden, I think that's also what you can do with Carmelo Anthony. By extension, you can also run your offense through him at times, and that's going to make him more comfortable. That's going to make him buy in more than what he did in Oklahoma City when he was almost exclusively a catch-and-shoot guy. The added bonus, of course, is that if you use him in these stretches early in the second and fourth quarters, late in the first and third, you're also hiding those defensive deficiencies even a little bit more because he's going up against second-team players rather than first-team guys. Now, why is it so important, this question I asked Jesus about physical or mental being the main concern, and Jesus, of course, leading to physical, being with his age, his mileage, etc., etc. The reason I think it's so important is because if you want to fix the situation so that the results are better in Houston than they were in Oklahoma City, you need to make sure you understand what the root of the problem actually is. For example, if his problems were mental, the way you fix that, if it can be fixed, It's probably by having lots of one-on-one conversations, you're trying to get him to buy into a specific role, etc., etc. On the other hand, if his problems are physical, like we've been saying, you should probably concentrate your resources, especially with 6 weeks or so still left until training camp, into developing the optimal plan to put him tactically and physically in the best situations to succeed on the floor. Now, that said, I'm not trying to say that Melo was happy in Oklahoma City, that his mental state was perfectly fine. I do think that especially by the playoffs, it's clear that Melo wasn't fully content with his role. But it's important to draw the distinction, in my opinion, between symptoms and the root cause. Because if you want to fix the problem, you want to make sure that you are treating whatever caused it in the first place, rather than the symptoms that just show up because of the underlying issue. So after hearing from Jesus the other day, and also considering those comments from Brian Geltzeiler earlier this summer, I did a little bit more digging into Melo's season in Oklahoma City, and honestly, I was a bit surprised by what I found. In short, there was a huge difference in the efficiency of Carmelo between the first 3 months of the season and the last 3 months. If you looked at his stats, his game log, and you didn't know the name Carmelo Anthony, all you saw was a 33-year-old player in his 15th year, and you looked at his month-by-month numbers, you'd probably think it was just a case of an aging player with a ton of mileage just wearing down under too high of a workload. Here's what I mean by that. Through January 20th, that's the first 45 games of the year, Melo averaged 17.9 points per game, we should call that 18, 6 rebounds per game, on 42.5% shooting from the field. From January 23rd onward, the last 33, below 14 points per game, 37% shooting, just 5.6 rebounds, 3-point percentage went down from 36.5 over the first 45 to 34.5 over the last 33. Then in the playoffs, it was even worse. The 6 playoff games, Oklahoma City against the Utah Jazz, below 12 points per game, 37.5% shooting again, and just 21% from 3. So everything overall, points, rebounds, shooting percentage, 3-point percentage, you can essentially divide his season in half. The first 3 months of the year, from mid-October until January 20th, and then everything from January 20th onward. And even within those first 3 months, you can see some splits. In October, that was the first 7 games of his season. That was by far his best individual month. Nearly 23 points per game on 46.5% shooting. He was ready to go from day one. Then in November, the scoring and the shooting fell off a little bit, but he averaged 7.3 rebounds per game, which was his highest of any month of the season. That seemed to indicate that he had fresh legs at the time. He also shot better than 38% from behind the arc, which was his second best month from 3 of the entire season. If it was just a matter of mentality, and Carmelo wasn't accepting of a number 3 role behind Russell Westbrook and Paul George, or it was just a matter of him being a cancer, the way some refer to him, or just not buying in to what Billy Donovan was selling in Oklahoma City. If that were the case, I think you'd see it from day one, especially because he only learned about the trade on the eve of training camp. Remember, it didn't get done because Carmelo was trying to get to the Rockets until late September. If the issue was mentality, then day one would have been even more difficult for him, considering he had no adjustment time in terms of learning the system, buying into the role. Instead, his best performances were out of the chute. So what that tells me is that he came into Oklahoma City wanting to make it work in a good state of mind, and then for varying reasons, his performance got worse as the season moved along. And what's interesting to me is that even given the fit issues last year in Oklahoma City, even given the declining production throughout the year that we just talked about, he still averaged 32 minutes per game. And by the way, that 32 minutes per game was consistent across the board. The first 45 games, the last 33, he played 78 games in the regular season, missed 4 with a minor injury, and then the 6 in the playoffs. So first part of the season, last part of the playoffs, he was always at 32 minutes per game, and that was the lowest of any of his 15 seasons in the NBA. In my mock Rockets minutes exercise a week ago on this show, I went through what I expected the minutes per game to be, assuming the Rockets added Carmelo Anthony for the current roster. I had Harden at 36, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon at 30, Carmelo at about 28, James Ennis at 26, whoever the backup center ends up being at about 12 minutes per game. And that's before we even get to guys like Gerald Green, Michael Carter-Williams, De'Anthony Melton, rookie out at guard out of USC that they like a lot. The point is, this Rockets team is pretty deep to where right now James Harden is the only guy I would say that I would confidently bet is going to average more than 30 minutes per game this season. So that's why I had Carmelo at 28 minutes, and in my opinion, you could actually cut him even lower than that. You could see him at 24 or 25, depending on exactly how they want to use him. And, of course, how he plays in training camp relative to James Ennis and the other wing options. Do the Rockets make another trade? More on that in a minute, et cetera, et cetera. But the point is, that 28 minutes might be too much. You could argue that he's in the low to mid-20s if you really wanted to. That's how deep the Rockets are, and it gives Mike D'Antoni a lot of options. So in terms of comparing Houston to Oklahoma City for Carmelo, on top of the obvious tactical changes in terms of how you could use him differently, again, running your offense through him at times, not just strictly catch and shoot, etc., I think you could also make a case that if you manage Carmelo's minutes more tightly and you take his mileage into account, a guy who's played mid-30s for 15-plus years now, including even last year at 33 years old, 32 minutes per game, maybe if you have him in the mid-20s, then you have a much fresher overall player, maybe like what we saw for Melo in October and November of last season, keeping that springiness, keeping that superior efficiency deeper into the season. To me, when I see Carmelo's strengths early in the year, that gives me hope, especially looking at his age and his mileage, that, hey, if you manage those minutes more conservatively, then maybe you get what we saw from Carmelo in October and November lasting throughout the season, as opposed to gradually fading out the way it seemed to with Oklahoma City. The splits, in short, give me even more optimism. That said, I understand there's no guarantee that this will work at all. We're not going to know anything regarding this until, really, things start up on the basketball floor in late September at training camp. Jesus is right about the hoodie Melo workout videos. They didn't really translate last year in Oklahoma City or prior years with the Knicks. Now, would it help if Carmelo is in ideal fitness? Sure, that would give him a better chance to not wear down as the season moves along. But honestly, at 34 years old, I think there's only so much he can do. And also, I think it's pretty clear that he was in great fitness last year, having spent the entire offseason working on a deal to Houston and being so excited about that. Unfortunately, I think just the realities of a long career in the NBA took hold. So Jesus is right about those workout videos not really translating. You shouldn't be optimistic, overly so, based on a social media or YouTube clip here or there. That said, I do think it's important to be open and honest in discussing all the potential things that may have caused his down season in Oklahoma City, because if you want to fix the problem, you need to make sure that you are addressing the root cause rather than the symptoms. And despite the national narratives, the way it looks to me, the more you look into the data, the more you dig into it, the more it seems like that physical and tactical considerations are what need to be at the forefront of the list for Mike D'Antoni moving forward over these next few weeks, as opposed to having any sort of heart-to-heart or anything else related to Carmelo Anthony's so-called mentality. Now, with everything about Carmelo other than his official pen-to-paper signing in the rearview mirror, let's talk about what's left for the Rockets this offseason. Honestly, it may not be much. They have a pretty full roster. As explained, the rotation is already pretty deep at this point. They do need to get D'Anthony Melton, rookie guard out of USC, signed to a portion of the mid-level exception. They do have one extra roster spot available after last week's cash-saving trade of Shinanu Anuaku to the Dallas Mavericks, but the Rockets aren't going to sign someone just to sign them. It needs to be an ideal fit. And right now, the rotation is pretty deep as is, so while it's not impossible they could add someone for the veteran minimum, it needs to be someone that they really, really buy into and fits a specific need. What's interesting is that if you look at the current roster construction, if the Rockets make another move before training camp, it's actually probably going to be a bigger one rather than a smaller one. That's because of that guy we touched on in the last segment. What's his name? Oh, right, Ryan Anderson, that guy who's making $20 million more than anyone other than James Harden and Chris Paul. A guy who right now, especially after signing Carmelo Anthony, really doesn't even have a role in your rotation other than, I guess, if you bring him to camp, he could be in that role for backup center in that mix with guys like Nene, Isaiah Hartenstein, Joe Chi, etc., for whatever small minutes, 10 to 15 per game that there are behind Clint Capella, and of course the Rockets whenever they play small with guys like PJ Tucker at the five. The point is, for a $20 million contract, that's not much of a role, and $20 million is a lot from a salary standpoint because you can match trade figures with almost anybody in the NBA, so it opens up a lot of possibilities. Now, that's not to say that Ryan is without value. He expires in 2020, and so because of that, by next summer, he could be very useful as a salary matching piece as an expiring because he's at that point, even though he's not really a good basketball player anymore, he's not going to be a negative. His value is going to be neutral, and some teams might even see him as a slight positive because of his ability to essentially be used as a cap-clearing mechanism. So it's not like the Rockets are just going to buy him out, in my opinion. There's value to keeping, if nothing else, that salary slot there. That said, what I believe the Rockets want to do, as I said last week, is something called have their cake and eat it too. And what I mean by that is keep that expiring salary spot for next summer, which opens up trade possibilities all around the league because of matching potential, but at the same time, get more help now with a player that brings you more in terms of what you need this upcoming season. I don't think the Rockets are oblivious to the fact that they've lost two defensive wings in Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute this offseason, and the only guy they've brought in is James Ennis. Now, maybe you could point to De'Anthony Melton out of USC, who's a guard, or Michael Carter-Williams, a guard but with some length, as defensive-oriented players, but I don't think that you can point to either of those and feel comfortable and say, hey, definitively, these are ready to be rotation players on a team expected to contend for a title this year. With Ennis, I think you can, but the other two, maybe, but you're reaching. And I don't think Daryl Morey, with Chris Paul in his remaining 2 to 3 prime years making a ton of money, is going to gamble just on that. I think they realize they lost two proven wings. They only brought in one. So I think they want to bring in one more. And no, Carmelo Anthony is not that guy. If anything, I think you should look at Carmelo Anthony, and this is the problem with a lot of national analysis of the Rockets offseason, you should look at Carmelo Anthony as a replacement for Ryan Anderson rather than a replacement for Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute. I think what Carmelo is going to do is give you a lot of what the Rockets wanted from Ryan Anderson without the negatives. If there's one thing we can say about Carmelo, he is not going to get tentative about shooting. That's something we saw too often from Ryan Anderson, despite his career shooting numbers, the fact that we know he can be a very good shooter in the NBA. He got tentative. He doubted himself. And in Mike D'Antoni's system, we've seen it from Gerald Green. The guys that succeed are the guys with basically no conscience. You just need to fire it up. Keep playing. Trust that it's going to fall. And of course, as stated earlier, Carmelo can do a lot of the other things that you wanted with Ryan Anderson. He can be a catch-and-shoot option, a floor spacer as a four, maybe even a small ball five at times. He can be someone who has some length that can match up with, from a physical standpoint, height, whatever it may be, with bigger players, while simultaneously, just like Ryan, having the gravitational pull as someone who can make shots all the way out to 26, 27 feet. So to me, Carmelo Anthony is not a replacement for Trevor Ariza or Luke Bamute. He's a replacement for what the Rockets wanted from Ryan Anderson entering last season but could not get on any sort of frequent basis. And maybe if things go well, Carmelo is certainly much more of a natural scorer than Ryan Anderson is. Maybe you can get much more. And if, in my opinion, the Rockets, if that scenario happens and Melo really pans out, you get Olympic Melo, you take that as a pleasant surprise. Right now, given his limitations, given his age, you look at him as a part-time player who's essentially an upgrade on what you had, a more consistent version of Ryan Anderson, hopefully a more durable one as well. As far as the second defender on top of James Ennis to replace Ariza and Bamute, maybe you get lucky with one or both of Michael Carter-Williams and De'Anthony Melton, but more likely, I think you fill that either via trade or via buyout. Now, it's important to keep in mind you do have the buyout option going into the season as well, and who knows, maybe someone gets bought out right before training camp, the same way Dwayne Wade did from Chicago this time last year. You never know. It's possible someone shakes free that way, and because the Rockets were able to get Carmelo at the minimum, they do have most of their mid-level exception, aside from what they used for Isaiah Hartenstein and what they will use, presumably, for De'Anthony Melton to use, and so that'll give them a financial leg up on other teams looking to sign any bought-out guys, in addition to being one of the two best teams in the NBA. So it's not that the Rockets have to make a trade. They're not desperate. They do have that in their back pocket. That said, I think the ideal would be to make a trade now and then save that MLE money as essentially a fallback for if one of these deals doesn't work, if another need arises during the year that you didn't anticipate, maybe somebody gets hurt, then you have that MLE, that buyout possibility, sitting in your back pocket for use during the season in case something you do during the offseason doesn't work. And I do think there's a sense of urgency because, as Daryl Morey has said, getting the one seed in this era of the Golden State Warriors, probably the most talented team in NBA history, now with Boogie Cousins for at least part of the season as well, you need to chip away at the margins, get every small advantage you can. And having Game 5 and Game 7 in Houston, if the Rockets can get that again, that's a big deal. Last year they won Game 5 and the series was tied at 2. And look at all the factors it took to beat them in Game 7. Even without Chris Paul, even with a historic outlier of an 0 of 27 shooting stretch from 3, even with some woeful, awful officiating, it was still a single-digit game. That's how much home court means. So yes, it's a big deal for the Rockets, and so because of that, I think that's another reason that you would want to make a trade before the season rather than during, because if you get those guys for day one, you get the benefits of having them on your team from the start of the year as opposed to having to integrate them midway through. You also get peak effectiveness probably because you can integrate them into the system and training camp rather than having to adapt on the fly and possibly kind of temporarily stunt your chemistry because of trying to work in new guys. So how does this relate back to Ryan Anderson? As explained, he's the trade chip. He's the salary piece that matches up with so many options around the NBA, and right now, you don't have a spot for him in your rotation. And it's been reported by plenty of reputable people, Zach Lowe, Brian Windhorst, that the Rockets have shopped them this offseason. Now, they're not going to get a bargain contract. They're going to get another overpaid contract, but someone that is presumably at a greater position of need. Kent Bazemore from Atlanta, Courtney Lee from New York. Some of these trades, of course, may take a third team if the receiving team does not want Ryan Anderson but may want an expiring one-year contract instead. You could look at James Johnson, Tyler Johnson, one of those guys in Miami, maybe coupled with Deion Waiters. That would presumably reduce the tax bill a little bit for the Miami Heat, and I think that could be potentially something the Rockets would explore because in any of these scenarios, Ryan Anderson is not as quality of a basketball player as who they would be acquiring. So they would have to trade a minor asset, such as a first-round pick moving forward, maybe some sort of prospect they have now, or maybe there's a way that they could just take on additional salary. We heard from Windhorst, the Rockets are looking at taking longer-term deals, and that can be the way the Rockets essentially pay for the premium of upgrading Anderson to someone that's a better basketball fit for what they need. Right now, I'd be surprised if anything's imminent. Not impossible, but I would say surprised, because in the NBA, deadlines typically drive action. And at this point, the next real deadline is effectively what drove the Carmelo trade to Oklahoma City last year, the start of training camp. So I think you're looking in all of these trade concoctions. The Rockets are trying to say, we're not going to panic. We have a great team already. We have a lot of depth. We also have most of the MLE for buyout possibilities. We don't have to make a trade. We're wanting your asking price to come down. The teams such as Atlanta, New York, whoever it may be, are saying, hey, we don't have to make a move now either. We can wait until the season starts and do something closer to the trade deadline. That said, both sides are probably posturing to some degree. As explained, I think Houston has a sense of urgency because if you get a deal done before the season rather than waiting until midway through, you can maximize your wins and hopefully make another run at getting 60-plus wins and getting the number one seed again. And if you're a team like Atlanta, New York, whoever it may be, well, number one, if Ryan's the worst player, it actually helps you lose more games and get a little bit more of a draft pick incentive. But beyond that, look, if you're a team like the Knicks or the Hawks or the Heat or whoever it may be, and you know you're going to move on from those players that you know they're not a part of your future, why not do it now? Why go through the charade of giving them reps in training camp and valuable minutes during the regular season? Why not just make a clean break in the offseason? It's easier for everyone and move forward. If anything, the Rockets may offer less during the season, because then once you get closer to the deadline, there's going to be more buyout options. And by the way, as explained, the Rockets have the full MLE or close to it. And at that point, if a guy like Jabari Carroll, Trevor Ariza, any of the other big 3-and-D wings might be about to become available, then why would the Rockets pay a premium to acquire a James Johnson or a Kent Bazemore or a Courtney Lee or whoever it may be on the trade market? There's risk to waiting as well. So the bottom line is, I think there's some posturing from both sides, but the closer we get to training camp, the more there's a deadline. And while it's not done, my guess is that there is a deal with Ryan before training camp just because it makes too much sense for the Rockets. That's what can maximize their chances at getting a one seed for this coming season. And even if for some reason the fit doesn't work out, then it's not like you're really doing anything long-term to constrain yourself. You can still use whatever player you acquire as a salary filler this upcoming season and next summer, the same way you could have with Ryan Anderson. And if for some reason the fit isn't great enough on the floor, then you still have most of the MLE to chase a buyout candidate to upgrade the spot if for some reason the trade now doesn't work out. To me, it's a minimal downside, a lot of upside, so my guess, it may not happen now, but closer to the training camp, I would not be surprised if someone shakes free and the Rockets are able to make a deal to further get one more 3-and-D defensive wing type, and at that point, I think we can be more realistic about what the Rockets did this offseason. Ennison, whoever that guy is, to replace Ariza and Bamute, Carmelo to replace Ryan Anderson, and then fortifying the end of the bench depth spots, merging words together there, with guys like DeAnthony Melton, Michael Carter-Williams, Vince Edwards, etc., etc. So with that, we'll end this Carmelo Anthony finally officially signing episode. Apologies for going a little long, but I figured we had a lot of ground to cover, not just with Carmelo himself, but also what could be left for the remainder of the offseason. As far as what comes next, of course, we'll wait for Carmelo to actually put pen to paper. But beyond that, we do have the schedule coming out very soon. It sounds like piece by piece. So as we get those nuggets, we'll, of course, have more episodes in the days ahead to break those down. For now, though, this is where we'll break. As always, I appreciate y'all so much for tuning in and listening. If you want more content in the interim, the best place, as always, to get it is on Twitter. I'm in there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, go to email, lockedonrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, a website at lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show. Anything we can do to improve this program, would absolutely love to hear from you. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us if you aren't already. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, etc., etc. That's how you get alerts right when our episodes come out, when there's breaking news, such as Carmelo signing. And beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to leave us a 5-star review, that's how we can make everything work business-wise here at Locked On Rockets and keep advertisers coming back and make the financial model work to keep us going as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So once again, the news of the day, Carmelo Anthony verbally agreeing to sign with the Houston Rockets, should become official in the coming days, if not hours. And from there, what's next? We await the NBA schedule, and we await any further trades that Daryl Morey may have up his sleeves this offseason. For now, though, enjoy Melo, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, and come back very soon with me right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.